Hello, and welcome to another episode of Photography Down the Line. I'm Ben Harmon, and I'm the director of Stills, a centre for photography and registered charity based in Edinburgh. To find out more about our work and how you can get involved and support us, please visit stills.org. For this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking to Edinburgh-based photographer Alicia Bruce. As well as talking about her experience in photography and education and her journey to where she is today, Alicia talked about her new publication, I Burn But I Am Not Consumed, an important and timely photo book that combines photography and activism with archive material and is a collaboration with a Scottish community that is standing up to Donald Trump. Thank you for listening. Hello, am I speaking to Alicia Bruce?
Yes, it's me speaking.
Hello, thank you so much for doing this. It's great to have you on here. What might I be interrupting with this call?
Today it's Tuesday, so that's my sort of ring-fenced practice day that always practice always seems to end up last, but this is part of my practice because it's dialogue about it. But I did the school run. I fed my pets. I have packed some books that the postie might ring the doorbell to pick up soon. And I'm doing some exhibition prep, so a few things, mostly practice related, and the washing machine's on.
Yeah. Good to hear that the feeding of the pets is in there as a top priority after the school run.
Before, I should say, they get fed first thing.
Yeah, they don't.
They wouldn't have it any other way.
And Alicia, if you don't mind, I wanted to ask you about your journey into photography. And I know that not everyone has a smooth path necessarily, but just for those that might not be familiar with you and your work, could you say a little bit about how you came to start making photographs?
I could. I'm the first person in my family actually to do an arts degree. And I'm the second person in my family to go to university after my sister, who studied nursing. And I did social sciences when I first left school. I thought I wanted to be a sleep psychologist. I was fascinated by sleep. And then I didn't complete that course. And there were a lot of social and economic reasons why I didn't complete that course. So for a couple of years, I had various jobs. I did trolleys on trains. I worked in a bookie. I was really good at doing play spots and working them out in my head. It's like a weird claim to fame. I worked in a cinema, and then my friend had a baby when we were teenagers, so all in this time, and I was taking photos of her baby. Someone gave me a shot of an SLR camera. This is the late 90s. Mm. So I took photos of her baby, Mia, who's now a grown-up adult. Hello, Mia. And I took photos of her baby, and my friend showed me how to process and print in a dark room, and I just loved it. I just became sort of, it's a cliche because I teach, you know, beginners darkroom and stuff as well, and it's like it really struck me that I had made that thing from start to finish, these portraits of my friend's baby for her. And then I decided that I wanted to go to college, so I started making a portfolio and sort of begged Aberdeen College to let me in. And so I did an HND at Aberdeen College, loved it, although sort of wanted to push myself more creatively. I guess it was a very technical course, and I did have some really amazing tutors there, like Colin Tom and Sheila Lithgow, and for a while Mark, I've forgotten Mark's surname, I'm so sorry Mark, but they were great, they were really good. A lot of my flatmates at the time, I lived in a 10-bedroomed ex-guest house full of art students. Wow. And a lot of them were at Grace School of Art. So there was that sort of dialogue about art.
The HND was in photography specifically?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I think it was Professional Photography and Imaging, it was called. And then I applied to go to university. I really wanted to go to this place called Edinburgh College of Art, but I didn't get in. Because I applied directly into second year, and apparently they only let a couple of people in. And at that time, it was usually international students. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know about all these systems. I didn't really understand UCAS forms. There was nobody to ask because my parents were like, "Feeding going to uni? What's the point in that? Why would you need a degree in photography?" So
And you're laughing because you're currently a teaching fellow at Edinburgh College of Art, which
Yeah.
we'll come to in a little while.
Yeah, I got in eventually. But yeah, not to learn, but yeah, I mean it's a privilege to be there. Yeah, so I got accepted into MMU in Manchester, where I could have gone direct entry into second year and got a degree within 2 years. But then one of my friends died, and I wanted to be closer to home. A few of my friends died when I was quite young, but one of them, he died quite suddenly of epilepsy, Lewis. So me and my friends went through this sort of period of, we were sort of inseparable. And yeah, I just didn't want to be too far at that point. So then I ended up going to Napier to study photography because it was like 3 hours away from Aberdeen in case another friend was terminally ill. So I wanted to be near. That was my reason for going to Napier. One of the reasons. So then I did a degree in photography and film at Napier. So it was a dual degree at the time, where you could do photography and film for the first couple of years and then specialise one medium or the other. So that was what I did. I graduated in 2006, but during my time at uni, I also to start with, I worked in a photo lab in Tall Cross called Picture This, which was, I've got a lot of funny stories.
Yeah, is that like a little commercial lab, like a high street lab, or was it a bit more?
Yeah, it was a mini lab, but there was a studio downstairs, and we did a lot of copy stand work and like kind of restoration. Unfortunately, a lot of readers' wives type stuff because my boss didn't judge anybody if they weren't doing anything illegal. But we also did a lot of posters for bands and things. So met a lot of musicians in Edinburgh at that time and sort of got to photograph some good bands as well. And then I ended up getting a job in Beyond Words, which was just the best thing that could have happened to me. Working and going from being working class, I also worked in a dry cleaner, I've been a cleaner, I've done all these really grafting jobs just to make enough money to pay my rent and go to college and uni. So Beyond Words, it just felt like a luxury of a job, like, looking at and ordering photography books and then talking about them all day, playing whatever music you like, not having to wear a uniform to work.
And this is, for those that don't know, this is a sort of specialist photography bookshop that was on Coburn Street near Stills and is now online only currently, I believe.
Yeah. And at the time, it was Scotland's only specialist photography bookshop. And it was great because I worked with so many photographers organising their book launches and writers like Jeff Dyer. I've got a book from him that says To Alicia That Saved the Day. And yeah, so I had all these like extra experiences through that. But I also, during my time at uni, I knew I couldn't volunteer or be an intern when I graduated because I would have to earn money right away because I did not get any family money. I had to pay my own rent, I had to pay my own way through. So I set up with one of my lecturers a self-directed elective at Stills. So I was at Stills doing my elective and realised really quickly that I needed something to do because I was so bored at the front desk. I'm so sorry to say that, but staring at Mary King's clothes out the window. And I just kept phoning Deirdre, the director at the time upstairs, give me something to do. So I would be like writing checks because that's how the tutors got paid, writing checks. And then eventually they let me coordinate the stairwell, the focus space, and organise pictures by either resource users or graduates in the focus space. So,
Such a detailed memory of your time here. That's amazing.
oh, sorry. I
No, it's good. It's interesting. I'm learning.
remember finding Arbus pictures in the basement. There was one day I was like, right, can I sort something? I was in a mood to sort of clean something. And I went down in the basement and found pictures by Dion Arbus and David Byrne. And this picture of a book by David Byrne from Talking Heads.
You had an exhibition here.
Yeah, and just all this.
The
And I
Arbus
was.
press prints, from the exhibition, 1981, I think it was.
Yeah, and then now they're up in Stills. I think you maybe instigated that, I think. I can't remember.
They're currently sa safely stored in our archive. We did have them on the walls for a while. That's right.
And me being the nerd that I am, I was like, does anybody realise who these pictures are by? And I got awfully excited about it. Yeah, so I did that, and then through Beyond Words as well, we ended up doing book launches at Still's because we had such a limited space in the shop, and we had this awful point where we got burgled when Faye Godwin was prepping for a talk, and she was amazing. I mean, what an honour and a privilege to meet her. And then the till was stolen from the shop, so it made it. That wasn't the reason we started doing them at Stills, but one of the things was like, how can we make things sort of more secure and bigger and stuff? So started doing the book launches at Stills. So we did ones with loads of people.
Would you say that your education in inverted commas from Beyond Words was equal to what you learned at Napier in a way?
It was different. Sometimes it was useful because it would counter some of the stuff. Like, I really struggled at the time with the theory, which now I love, but well, I don't love it all. But yeah, I once got my boss to read an essay that we had to read for writing for one of my tutors, and he was like, "This is absolute gobbledygook." And I was like, "Thank God," because I really don't understand it. But then I was also really lucky to have Roberta McGrath as a theory tutor, and she really opened my eyes and supported me in a way that wasn't available with everyone. You know, you were meant to be at a certain academic level to be at university, but we weren't all at that level, and she really nurtured that. And I remember Ben as well. I was when I was in third year, I did an essay for Roberta, and I went to GoMa in Glasgow because I was writing about Barbara Kruger and I think Helen Chadwick, Nan Goldin, and I was at the GoMa exhibition, the Barbara Kruger exhibition, and this lovely curator sent me loads of photocopied research, and it was you.
I do remember that.
It was one of these points where I was really looking at social and political context of work and how, you know, photography could be used as a tool for activism. And so you were part of that. Thank you.
I'm glad. You're very welcome. Yeah, so I was wondering about your time at Napier, if you had anything else to say about that. You talked about Roberta. Was it important, an important time to kind of meet like-minded peers as well? And have you kept in touch with them? And
I mean, every point there are people that you meet. So, like in work at Stills and at uni. So, who else was in my class? There's a few of us that are still practicing. So, Arpita, my class, Arpita Shah, we were really close towards the end of our degree, and then we sort of lost touch. We both ended up in relationships with guys who we're still with, who we've got children with now. So we ended up sort of drifting apart a wee bit. And also, I had to work so much when I graduated. Like, I didn't have the luxury that some graduates have to find myself. I just had to work to pay my rent. Who else? Donna Murray. Donna's a wedding photographer, social photographer up in Aberdeen. She just documented my book launch for me as a gift, which was really nice of her. Claire, who works at Stills, she was in my class as well. Hope she
So
doesn't
actually, probably quite a high percentage in your year have managed to sustain a career in photography in one way or another.
Yeah, I don't want to give people the impression that it's easy though. But
No.
yeah, I'm just trying to like picture my class. I wish I'd thought about that in advance. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of us, and then like the years above and the years below. I mean, one of the things about Napier was that Hannah Starkey studied there. And that was a real and Lynn Ramsey, the filmmaker. So that made me think, wow, studied there. And then there's people like Kat Golick and Jill Todd, of course, people who were in different year groups. Yeah, I guess it's a community of interests. Really, I'm really sorry to any of my pals that I've completely forgotten to mention here. I will have forgotten because I've gone off on
No,
a tangent. But I also met a lot of people again through Stills, the artists in residence, and the board at Stills at the time are all still my friends. And I have to mention Robin Galanders and Marjorie Galanders as amazing, supportive, kind people. At one point, they offered to let me live in their house because I had problems with my flatmates, which I wouldn't be able to say that to my students. So, I mean, they were brilliant. And also the artists in residence at Stills at the time, Zoe Walker and Neil Bromovich. I work with Zoe now. Nikki Bird, who's been an amazing friend and mentor all through the years. Chris Dukes, still a really close friend. And there was a lady, Catherine, who I think she's moved away to Ireland now, and Sam, who's now in Orkney, Sam Clark as well, was one of the artists in residence. And then there were all the people that have volunteered with it stills. There was on the board, there was Bev Hood, Robin Galanders, Alex Hamilton, who you know, Patricia MacDonald. So yeah, so a sort of community of interest.
How did you find yourself, in photography as an educator? I know there's a lot of hard work involved, but I'm interested to know sort of how you started to teach and how you sort of feel about it now. And I wondered if you could
Yeah,
say.
so I started, I guess, when I was a kid. My mum was a nursery teacher at our nursery. She was a youth worker at the after school clubs that me and my sisters went to. She was a dinner lady at my school. And so everything we did, like on a Sunday night, we would be making Play-Doh for other children and that kind of thing. And often at the after school club, I would be helping other kids to do craft stuff and everything. When I was a student, I used to volunteer at stills workshops, and I also decided when I was in third year I wanted to be an art therapist, which got me into working with communities. So my first job after graduating, my first paid job, was working with the Workers' Educational Association on a big community project about Riddles Court on the Lawn Market, working with adult learners and adults who maybe didn't get a sort of traditional avenue in education. And we did a publication together about the history of this building, and it was a campaign as well to try and save the building. And then through the WEA, I got loads of work through all sorts of different charities in Edinburgh, working with different groups of people. So, like MECOT in Leith, and working with a lot of carers, doing sort of respite workshops and photo walks. And I worked in at Wale in Wester Hales. We set up a thing called West Side Snappers, which was a lottery funded kids photography evening that was every Thursday evening, and they'd learn how to use the dark room and stuff. And then did Street Arts for Wales, where we would go around Wester Hales. Like Wester Hales is really similar to where I grew up, so it's like you would let the kids know what time you'd be in different areas, and then there'd be an impromptu art activity would happen. Yeah, I did lots of that for years, but then I also still worked in the bookshop. We're getting there, we're getting there. And then I worked at the fruit market, and then I was like, please let me do workshops. So I worked with Johnny Gailey and Tracy Morgan. I did the education work for the close-up exhibition at the Fruit Market Gallery, which was Don Adds and Simon Baker curated that exhibition. It was all about defamiliarization in photography and film through the lens of the close-up. So I was always sort of trying to build up experience. And then my first residency that I did was 2008 at Aberdeen Art Centre, and it was 3 months. It was really good funding, actually, looking back. And through that, I had an exhibition, but they wanted me to do a programme of events, which I did them all in Doric, because in Aberdeen, everybody speaks Doric, and so did my family. And then I made a wee publication with a design agency, sponsored my residency, called Hampton Associates in Aberdeen. So we made this wee book that was like half my portfolio, and then you would flip it and it was half the education work. So I used that to try and get other education work, workshops and that sort of thing. National Galleries as a freelancer for years. And then sorry, this is a long I'm not one of these privileged people who's had a job made for them. I've really grafted. So then I ended up teaching at Fife College. It was called Carnegie College at the time, teaching on the HND there. And then I got offered work at Edinburgh College, which was Stevenson College at the time, doing darkroom stuff and school college partnership. I was also at that time working at street level, where I did workshops there for 10 years. And yeah, I've worked in loads of places.
While you were doing all this, I mean, how did you find time to work on your own projects, and what were those? And what I'm hinting at is, when did the work at Many start?
So the Aberdeen Arts Centre research residency in 2008, I was already collating research about Many. I was already keeping my eye on that then, because all my work was about social and political themes and issues in that area, and because that's where I'm from. Then I would work One day a week at Beyond Words, 2 days a week at the fruit market. I would get on the train on the Sunday night to Aberdeen. I would do my residency till the Thursday night. On the Friday morning, I would get the train back to Edinburgh, go and open up Beyond Words. And so I just worked all the time. And then when I started seriously photographing the mini project, I was made redundant by the fruit market. I was offered to become an info assistant or take some money. So I took the money. And then, that paid my rent for that summer. And then I started seriously doing the mini project. But also, I'd been offered an exhibition at Peacock Visual Arts the following January. So that was the sort of the goal at that point was to make a project about social and political themes and issues in Aberdeen City and Shire. And that was the sort of overarching thing. And when I went to Mike Forbes's house, I was just so blown away by Mike. Everyone that I met in many that I was like, this is what I want to focus this time on. And I also had a bit of a grant from Aberdeen City Council.
One of the main reasons I'm talking to you today is that this beautiful book, I Burn But I'm Not Consumed, has come out, published by Daylight.
Thank you.
And it's on the Many Project, but there's so much to it. So for those of who might not know about this work, could you sort of introduce it? I know you've got so many stories, but I wondered if you could introduce it a little bit. What is the subject of this book?
It's looking at 16 years of Donald Trump's impact on the coastal community in Aberdeen called Many. And in 2006, the same year I graduated, he announced plans that he was going to build what he claimed would be the greatest golf course in the world. He was going to do it on the sand dunes that I played as a little kid. And the fanfare was unbelievable at the time. You know, the local press, people were like literally falling at their feet for this stranger from the States who was flashing his supposed wealth. So the book really is me bringing together an archive, portraits, testimonials from all of the residents who were impacted, bullied, and belittled by Trump, and also a sort of chronological timeline of things that have happened there with essays. So I would say, although my name's on the front of the book, I didn't really want my name on the front of the book because it's co-authored by a lot of people, I would say. And there's essays by Karine Powart, whose song "I Burn But I Am Not Consumed" is the title for the book. It's also the MacLeod family motto, which is Trump's Scottish mother's family motto. Leslie Riddick, who writes about crofters' laws and rights and history, and then Louise Pearson from the National Galleries of Scotland, who puts it in the context of the sort of national collection in Scottish art, and Katrina McCarra as well. She wrote from 2010, and then every single one of the local residents was involved in kind of making testimonials about their experience as well.
I'm looking through the book now. I should say, how do people get hold of a copy? Is it best to go via your website?
Yes, please get it by my website because I don't get any money for it otherwise.
AliciaBruce.co.uk. So generous, the amount of space you've given over to all the other contributors. And so interesting, all the sort of press cuttings and things at the back as well, and the timeline. Could you remind me when you would have started? Did you say 2008? Or was it slightly later?
The first photographs I made were 2010, 4th of July 2010. That
And
would
by
be
that point, was it still news, or had work actually started?
It was still news. It was still news as in the residents were being bullied and belittled in unbelievable ways. You know, often Mike Forbes was on the front page of the local news as the Trump opponent, or Molly Forbes, who was in her 80s, was Trump opponent with like an angry picture of her on the front page of the newspaper. And then construction began, I think, in late July, early August. So the days that that started, I was photographing. So all these posts went out, which are in the book. And there was a map, a sort of developer's map, and the plans for what Trump had. So I'd started to work out where numbers 1 to 18, there were all these numbers on the map, which we realised were the golf tees. And so I started trying to work out where each of them were, because then I wanted to do this sort of chronological study of the land whilst there was this encroaching development, just as it was starting to be built.
I'm curious to know, how quickly do you think the political and media enthusiasm for the project started to change. I mean, was that it sounds shocking now to think, or maybe not to some people, but it sounds shocking to me to think that this idea was embraced at, such a high level.
Oh yeah, I mean, I used to get laughed at work when I said what I was doing. Then people would be like, "Just let the man build his golf course." Family members comment on Facebook as well. Just I mean, it took a long time because people believe. I don't know if you've ever seen "So I Married an Axe Murderer," but Mike Myers' film, where his mum talks about the paper. It's in the paper, son. It must be true. That's what that's what working class parents are like. The press started to really change in early 2011, and I feel really privileged to be part of that with a lot of other people, I would have to say. But when my pictures were first exhibited at Peacock Visual Arts, the residents were still getting very negative press against them, because Trump had thrust them into the media spotlight as like pawns for his own usage. He was trying to build up this battle, and I used my work. There was a marketing person, Kylie, at Peacock at the time, and she was brilliant and we said, we'll get this into news sections more than art sections, because then it gives a chance to give the residents perspective. So that was what happened. And then it was also, we were on STV News, me and Susan Monroe. And then there was also the filmmaker Anthony Baxter, who made a brilliant documentary called You've Been Trumped. And it started to be seen in cinemas later that year. I think it was May or April. There were green carpet premieres everywhere. That film built up an understanding, I think, in a way that still photographs can't. I mean, I think mine have got longevity in a different way. A film really, people pay attention to something like that because it's dramatic with all the music and things. But then there was also July 2010, Anthony Baxter and Richard Finney, his producer, were arrested outside Susan Monroe's house. And then that became a big news story. And luckily, Anthony had kept filming while the police were like roughly handling him. The police had been sent by Trump at the time. And the two men, Anthony and Richard, were held overnight. They had DNA samples taken, they had their equipment taken off them. And then when they got it all back, they realised that they had footage of their arrest. And Susan Monroe, one of the residents, she had photos of them being arrested because she sent me a message that day saying, be really careful, this has just happened. And it was all because Ant and Richard were trying to find out why the Forbes family had black water, why their water had been cut off, and why Molly in her 80s was having to get a wheelbarrow down to the burn to get water to feed her hens and her plants. It was horrendous. I think the NUJ did a big thing about that, about how sort of unprecedented it was. They'd never heard of such an extreme case of violence against journalists in Scotland. So there was that. There was also a Panorama came out, I think October 2010, around about the same time Trump got an honorary doctorate from Robert Gordon University. A lot of stuff like that. But I think You've Been Trumped made a huge difference. It really, and get Anthony getting that onto the BBC as well, knowing the right channels where to show these things.
So for the space of sort of 15 years, you were back and forth from there a lot, quite frequently. You've made other work in that time too. I mean, it's sort of astonishing that you've had time to do anything else. I also wanted to ask about the book and, how it feels now having this book out finally, because I think you've patiently waited for the right time and for the opportunity to get things together to publish this book. How do you feel about it, and what's next? I've never been to the location myself, so I'm wondering what it's like there now, and if you will continue to go up there.
I'll always go up there. I mean, the residents are really close friends, and it's part of my history, my childhood history, my teenage history, and checking on them. Ah, the book is beautiful. I mean, that was one of the reasons I worked for the publisher that I wanted to work with, because I knew they made really beautiful, beautiful books. They like, I mean, a few times spoke about a book and spoke to publishers before it, and I kept thinking, like, who am I to spend this amount of money on a thing? When there's people starving in the world, when there's other things that money can be spent on. And then it was really because when Sheila died, well, Mickey Foote, one of the residents, he passed away in 2014. He had a heart attack. He was the Clash's producer, the first Clash album. He was an amazing guy. Moved to Aberdeen for peace. And then Sheila passed away suddenly in 2020, and we'd been speaking about doing more pictures and for the book, but whenever we were up, I just felt like I couldn't go to anybody's door. I didn't want to pass anything on to them when they're living remotely, you know, if we caught anything on the way during COVID. And then Sheila passed away suddenly, and then Susan passed away like 3 months later, Susan Munro. And there's a quote in the book from Sue Edwards, one of their friends and campaigners, who said that she's got no doubt that the additional stress that this caused sort of escalated people's health problems. Because the stress of all of that media scrutiny and everything, and just people constantly at their door wanting things from them. You know, like all of them had to buy like big stocks of biscuits just to feed all the all the folk who would turn up offering to help. Some did help, some were not really there for the residents. Yeah, it was, I was always bringing them biscuits. People used to send stamps to Molly. What was my point? Yeah, sorry. And then Susan passed away, heartbreaking. And then Molly passed away in the April. Yeah, I got this opportunity to apply for a bursary for Format. And at the time I was teaching like almost full time. Like my own practice goes way down the pile sometimes. And I was like, well, if I do this, I'm going to use it as an opportunity to get this into the most beautiful book that I can do within my means, if you like. And I'm going to work with somebody that I think will help me get it seen in the States, get it into the Library of Congress, make sure it's made into a historical record and a celebration of the people who were really remarkable in the way that they stood up to Donald Trump. And they also campaigned to save the landscape. And unfortunately, the area lost its status as a site of special scientific interest. But how beautiful that they cared so much to do that. So I think it's important to properly celebrate them in something that's really beautiful. And when my boxes of books turned up, I didn't look at them for a while. I felt quite detached and exhausted. I think for me, it was when I took them up to Many, and when Mike Forbes, one of the residents, was looking through the book, and he said, "You know, it's brilliant." And he said, "It's a bit like a really beautiful album, a photo album." And then I was filling up, and yeah, he was reading, because obviously, like, it's a tribute to his wife, it's a tribute to his mum, her obituaries in it, which I did the picture for her obituary or provided it.
I think
So
that's a really nice description of it as an album. I really like that. I'm just looking at the final paragraph in your foreword, which sums it up. My wish is that others will see through this lens the importance of integrity, compassion, and stewardship of our natural world above profit, power, and TV personalities.
exactly.
Amen.
That is it, really. I mean, everything else comes and goes, but you know, when we're on our deathbeds, all we've got is our integrity. We know if we've been good folk or not. So that's the main thing for me. It's not about me as an artist or a photographer. It's about celebrating these amazing people, and I've had a privilege of being part of their lives. So I feel sort of duty bound to do something.
Well, I really hope people listening to this have, if they haven't seen it and got a copy, seek it out. It's a really lovely thing. And we do have a copy in the reference library if anyone is interested in making an appointment as well. I wanted to ask you, we're kind of running out of time a little bit. One of the things that happened in, I think, 2014, you were awarded the RSA Morton Award.
Oh yeah,
Exhibition of the Sim Project. I've never really asked you about it. I'd really love to. Do
Yeah.
you mind talking a little bit about that?
The Sim Project. I applied with that proposal twice to the RSA, and I remember sort of giving up applying for the Morton Award for a few years, because when Christine Borland got it, I thought, I've got no chance. She's like, you know, the top Scottish artist. But I applied for the Sim Project. I was taking pictures for Bev Hood and Sharon Quigley at Forth Valley. We were doing a completely different project. And then the arts officer, Babs McCool, coolest name in the world, asked if we wanted to come and see the Sim Centre. Bev and I were both just absolutely blown away by this place with these robotic patients, and the doctors were behind mirrored screens operating them, giving them voices. They bled, they, you know, they had medical emergencies. I just really wanted to do something about that. I wanted to make work about it, but I didn't have time. And at the time, I had a full-time teaching job as well. So I wrote this proposal, and then I didn't get the money. And then the next year, I didn't have any time or money, and I just reapplied. And I said, I just wrote on the top, this is the same application. I just really want to scratch this itch. I really want to investigate this. I think it's just amazing. Bev was doing amazing work, Beverly Hood as well, who was on the board at Stills when I was a volunteer there years ago. And she was working with like actors and performers, and she was doing these amazing. She got all these doctors to a conference once and had this actor pretending to be a doctor who was almost like snogging Rusosiani while another performer was falling in love with the mannequin. I wanted to make a short film, and I wanted to document these centres. I didn't have a massive plan, and then I bumped into Lena Namari, who was the first person that got the Morton Award, and I also used to work with her at Stills. She said, "Book a flight." She said, "Buy a camera, book a flight. That money'll fritter away really quickly. You get yourself an experience that you wouldn't get otherwise." And I was like, "Oh, where could I go?" And she's like, "Where's the first place that comes into your head?" And I was like, "New York. I'm gonna go to New York." So then I ended up going to New York and photographing a sim center there. And then I went up to Canada and went to Montreal and then Quebec City, where I was also having an exhibition through Street Level at the time with the Many Work. So while I was there, luckily I met French speaking photographers, Normand and Charles, who we exhibited with at Street Level on this exchange. And so they were phoning sim centres for me. And then I was going along and photographing them. So I've gone to a few countries.
Briefly say again what happens at sim centers.
So simulation centres are these amazing spaces that are used for education, and they have these robotic patients, sort of silicone robotic patients, who doctors and nurses are trained to work on emergency situations with these patients. So it becomes a very real thing, and they're doing sort of CPD with their colleagues. They have to save the life of this patient who's going, "Help me, I'm dying," and they get different accents, they wear different perfumes and all that kind of things. There's Sim Mom as well. This is another weird thing. I became obsessed with Sim Mom, and I didn't realize I was pregnant at the time. And when I was in New York, I went and met Susan Bright, who was writing her PhD on photography and motherhood. And I was telling her about Sim Mom and how I was away to go and photograph Sim Mom at the New York Sim Centre. And then that became a real focus. By the time I got to Quebec, I was photographing the Sim Mom maternity wards. But yeah, it's all very real, and they use them in medical education. Like everything, Western hospitals have better facilities than some of the other parts of the world, and then so things are donated to other countries. But yeah, it's a remarkable community of interests as well. And all the doctors I met, they were all from all over the world, but they all cared the same. They all held the babies like real babies. They all just had such compassion for the mannequins.
Amazing, brilliant. And like I said, there's more information on your website for people to have a look at pictures. They're really, really extraordinary, I think.
Oh, thank you. And the RSA have got the film that I made with Michael Prince as well. I made a film called Sim Scenario.
Alicia, we're running out of time a little bit, but I wanted to ask what's next for you. I mean, obviously the book has been a huge project for you. You've had a few launches already. Are there more planned? Are you doing more with the book? Or do you have other projects and exhibitions to focus on?
Yeah, there's two more. There's an exhibition just now at the Museum of Contemporary Photography in Chicago called Love Still Not the Lesser, and it's got four images from the book in it. It focuses on Mike and Sheila Forbes's relationship. There's going to be a talk and book signing at BOP Bristol. I was invited by Martin Parr to do that. I mean, he was a surprise supporter of the book. He contacted me. He pledged for the book in the Kickstarter. I raised £22,000 in a month to pay for the book. Martin bought a book, but then afterwards he emailed me and said I'd like to separately buy prints for my collection. So he invited me, which was really amazing. I mean, to get the work to, I mean, my work's not necessarily for a photography audience, if that makes sense. It's sort of, I hope it's broader than that. I'm not just singing to the choir. And then I'm going to tell you about another photo institute. So then it'll be at the British Centre for Photography in November, the 28th of November. So BOP is the 7th of October, and then the British Centre for Photography is Tuesday, the 28th of November, and that one will be in conversation with Christiane Monerace, who does Photo Monitor and Hapax, and has been a beautiful, amazing, supportive person. So yeah, and there's a few more things coming up, but I can't announce them
Yeah, fair
officially.
enough. Curious
Yeah.
to know, do you notice anything particular about the way audiences react to the work in the UK compared with the US?
Oh, I'm not sure. I mean, well, in the way in the States, we just kept getting invited to all these amazing parties and things. I got invited to things with Lee Friedlander and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, people got really excited in a way that people in the UK don't do, I suppose. They don't, Yeah, I mean, it's not like my friends or like my close friends and family. It's just part of me and what I do. But there, yeah, people got really excited about it, and especially the ones that hate Trump. But then remember, I'm meeting liberal people in arts organisations, so I don't know what it would be like if I
Sure.
went to Pittsburgh and sat on a street corner with it, you know. Yeah, and then in France, in Arles, it was really well received. Some of the books are going to Unseen in Amsterdam. But in Scotland, I mean, people just, there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of reviews being written for the book just now, but it's emotional. I mean, the Aberdeen launch was just all tears. Singing as well, thanks to Corinne Pourt, got everyone singing, which was beautiful. But yeah, it's been really emotional.
Well, well done again on the book, and thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thank you.
Really
Thanks
good
for
to
having me.
speak to you and to hear about everything you've done, and to speak so honestly about your career as well and how you've got to the place you're at now. And yeah, I look forward to catching up with you soon.
Oh, thanks, Ben. Thanks so much. And thank you for being part of it all as well.
Not at all. Take care, Alicia. See you soon.
Thanks. Cheerio.
Bye bye. You've been listening to Photography Down the Line and my conversation with Edinburgh-based photographer Alicia Bruce. If you enjoyed this and would like to hear more episodes, there are over 50 available via your podcast provider. Thank you for listening.